The following program is brought to you by Podcast One Sportsnet.
The Steve Austin Show is sponsored in part this week by DDP Yoga. Now, you already know what WWE Hall of Famer Diamond Dallas Page and DDP Yoga has done to help thousands of people all over the world, but now Dallas has done it again. DDP Yoga has added DDPY Rebuild. It's a new variation of the traditional DDPY program catered toward those aged 55 plus and those with physical limitations and extremely limited mobility. The DDPY Rebuild workouts will take you from the bed to the chair and eventually to standing upright with the support of a chair. The DDPY Rebuild program is the perfect holiday gift for your parents, your grandparents, or even your great-grandparents. So head over to ddpyoga.com/rebuild to learn more and pre-order the DDPY Rebuild program. Also, DDPY is having their biggest Black Friday sale ever. 30% off all DVDs, app membership, and apparel on ddpyoga.com. You heard it right, 30% off. They've never had a sale like this one before, so take advantage. There's no better time to take advantage of the DDPY program. DDP Yoga can work for all ages, weights, and fitness levels. It provides a kick-ass cardio workout with minimal joint impact, and it'll have you on your way to not only changing your life, but owning your life. Also, FYI, Dallas will be appearing December 8th through the 10th at the Steel City Con in Monroeville, Pennsylvania. Dallas will be there signing autographs, taking pictures, and talking to the fans. For more information, go to www.DiamondDallasPage.com and click on the Appearances tab to get all the info.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
From Hollywood, California, by way of the Broken Skull Ranch, this is the Steve Austin Show.
Give me a hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Now, here's Steve Austin.
All right, everybody, welcome to the Steve Austin Show. I'm coming to you from the mean streets of Los Angeles, California today. It is Monday morning as I cut to open this podcast, and I'll be damned, it's been a busy weekend for the kid over here at 317 Gimmick Street. What a weekend it has been. Turns out the WWE has been in the West Coast, on the West Coast, whatever it is. They ran Anaheim Sunday night on a house show, and then tonight, Monday Night Raw at the Staples Center. Tuesday, SmackDown is going to be somewhere nearby, but the bottom line is that means that the WWE is out here on the West Coast. They in my stomping ground. So, hell, man, I got a people sending me text messages. I had been trying to hook up with a couple of people to do some podcasts. And, god dang, I talked to a bunch of cool cats this weekend. First and foremost on the list, Sasha Banks, the legit boss, and my old buddy Bailey came by to see me at 317 Gimmick Street. Bailey came by a couple of months ago. She was on the podcast, and she sent me a text message. She goes, hey, so we're coming through town. Can we stop by and see you? I said, well, hell yeah, you can come by and see me. So it turns out Bailey and Sasha come over to the house here, and Bailey had to go do a personal appearance. So before she left, me, Sasha, and Bailey sat there and chopped it up for about 35 minutes, talking about saving money on the road, staying in 2.5 3-star hotels, and life on the road in general before she had to go do her appearance. And it was a thing for YouTube, I do believe. But nonetheless, I'll probably drop that podcast probably next Tuesday, and I'll back it up with a little Q&A because Bailey couldn't stay long enough for me to talk to her one-on-one again. And then when Bailey left, you know, Sasha and I sat down, and we talked for about an hour, hour and 15 minutes. And just kind of shot the breeze. And it's the first time I really had a good chance to sit down for any length of time and talk to Sasha. And I love the legit boss gimmick. It's one of my favorite gimmicks going. I think she plays it to a T. She's working babyface now. Quite frankly, I just love her as a heel because of that swagger that she has. But we'll talk about that. And she's really embracing the babyface run that she's got on right now. A breath of fresh air to talk to her. She's a class act. You know, I always go back to that match they had in Brooklyn at NXT TakeOver. I know it's been a while now, but it was just off the charts, the kind of chemistry that they have. And I guess they're the best friends. They're traveling up and down the road together. It was great to talk to both of them. I wish Bailey could have stayed longer. But today, here at 317 Gimmick Street, I am talking with the legit boss, Sasha Banks, WWE superstar, one of my favorites. And then, I tell you what, it was a busy day. After the house show, Elias comes by 317 Gimmick Street, and he rolled in. Holy smokes, it was close to 10 p.m. by the time he got here. So I sat here and shot the breeze with Elias, and we started text messaging each other back and forth. I got in touch with him. Elias, the Drifter, he's not the Drifter anymore, but that Elias gimmick. I've got a funny story at the beginning of that podcast. I didn't exactly know what Elias was saying when he says, "Who wants to walk with Elias?" So you'll hear that story when I talk to him on Thursday. But he rolled in, brought his guitar with him, and we sat down and we shot the breeze. It's a family-friendly podcast. I always try to go family-friendly with the WWE people, and had a great conversation with him. And he stayed over here probably till 12:30, almost 1 o'clock. And I said, "Man, I got to get my ass to bed." And he had to get over to the hotel at the LAX area and get ready for Monday Night Raw. I'm sure he's got a big night tonight. It'll be last night as you listen to this podcast. And after Monday Night Raw tonight, I've got Carl Anderson and Luke Gallows coming by 317 Gimmick Street. And I think we're actually going to, I don't know, maybe share an adult beverage or two. We're going to shoot the breeze. I don't know if we'll talk a little bit about wrestling, but I just want to shoot the breeze with these guys. And we'll fire up the microphone and we'll see what happens. Gallows and Anderson coming by today. I guess according to Sasha or Bailey, they're about to go to India for about a 3-day swing. They just got back from the UK. I'll tell you, man, the life of a WWE superstar is super busy. These cats, the men and women, are all over the place. And anytime you can get them in person to talk to them, you know, I try to take advantage of that opportunity when they're on the West Coast. And like I said, it was late. The other one was early. But, you know, trying to work their schedule and my schedule into being able to open up a can of audio whoop-ass with them. I always love talking about the business of pro wrestling / sports entertainment with the WWE superstars that are currently in the grind in the trench right now. And talking about the business is one of my favorite things in the world. And that's what I got a chance to do a lot of. And that's what I'll be doing tonight after Monday Night Raw. Hey, man, as you listen to this podcast, if you listen to it on a Tuesday, make sure you check out tonight's episode of Broken Skull Challenge. The women were just absolutely phenomenal last Tuesday night. And it seems like the American viewing public that watched Broken Skull Challenge on CMT Tuesdays at 10, 9 Central just absolutely fell in love with Megan from Oregon. 22-year-old young lady from Oregon, works on a dairy farm. Just very quiet, very humble, very classy, very unassuming. And she didn't even watch the Broken Skull Challenge. She didn't even know about it. Her father was a fan of the show. And he said to her, "You know, I think you would do pretty good out there. You know, why don't you give it a try?" And, man, she came out there, and man, that young lady was so badass and so impressive and classy. It was just a breath of fresh air. I mean, I love the way she operated out there. I love when the trash talkers, you know, come out there and the people that are just alpha or just with that aggressive mindset. I like it all. It makes for great television. So when she came out there, it was just badass. She was just very quiet about the way she went about business. But every time I said, "Ready, set, go," she opened up a can of whoop-ass. And with that being said, congrats to my returning champion. This is the end of the 10 regular season episodes. We still have 3 more badass episodes coming. And Corinna came out there, and she was able to unseat Cassidy, my former returning champion. And Corinna is an absolute class act and a premier, grade A, unbelievable athlete. So she's my returning champion as we head into the episodes that we have coming up. I'm looking forward to seeing them. I hope you enjoy them. I've had a great 5 years doing that show. See if we get any more. And that's the bottom line on that. Keep watching Broken Skull Challenge. Tuesdays, 10, 9 Central on CMT. We have 3 more episodes. You do not want to miss them because they are that epic. They give it hell. Hey, before I get into the podcast, I want to thank the people over at Bushwhacker. Bushwhacker makes fender flares, all kinds of aftermarket products for different four-wheel drive applications. And through my friend, Matt D'Andrea, who is part of the CarCast over there with Adam Carolla, Matt is at Motorator on Twitter and Instagram. He called me up and he says, "Hey, Steve, Bushwhacker built this badass Jeep It's a four-door Jeep, 2017 Wrangler, and they put a bunch of their stuff on it for SEMA, and you want to drive it for about a week. And I said, well, hell yeah, man, I love Jeeps. I love to drive that thing. So they brought that thing over here today, and it's, man, I don't know what kind of lift kit that thing's got on. Probably about a 6-inch lift, 37-inch tires. That 4.0 motor really does a good job with those tires. I've been driving around. I'm going to be driving around for the next week. So thanks to my buddy Matt D'Andrea, Motorator on Twitter and Instagram, and the people over at Bushwhacker, at Bushwhacker Inc. on Instagram. Anyway, we're coming back with my conversation with one of my favorites of all time, the legit boss, Sasha Banks. But before we get to Sasha, let me get you up on history's new scripted drama series, Nightfall. Set in a medieval France, tangled in politics and conflict, one headstrong and courageous Templar knight, Landry, will lead his order of warrior monks on a life-or-death mission to find the lost Holy Grail. Focusing on themes such as belief, sacrifice, politics, love, power, and revenge, Nightfall goes deep into the clandestine world of this legendary brotherhood of warrior monks to find out who these knights were, how they lived, and what they died believing. Explore the mysterious world of the Knights Templar in history's new hit drama series, Nightfall, premiering tomorrow night, Wednesday, December 6th at 10, 9 Central, only on History. Control the Grail. Control the world.
I'm Wade Keller, host of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, exclusively here at Podcast One, 4 days a week. Tuesday mornings, we cover Monday Night Raw from the night before. Wednesday mornings, we cover SmackDown from the night before. Thursdays is our flagship, where we talk about the whole pro wrestling industry and all the latest news. And Fridays features my weekly interview. Recent interviews have included Sean Waltman, X-Pac, talking about the John Cena legacy, what makes AJ Styles so great from a wrestler's perspective, and how Vince McMahon has changed over the years. Other interviews recently have included Podcast One's very own Jim Ross, the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase, ex-WWE creative team members, and more. Check out the show 4 days a week. Just search Wade Keller on the Podcast One app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. That's Wade Keller's Pro Wrestling Podcast.
This is the Steve Austin Show.
Hell, man, I'm sitting here with legit boss, Sasha Banks. We just got finished recording about a 30-minute special with Bailey, the hugger. I got a hug coming and going.
Yeah.
Yep, I got a hug from you, too. Welcome to Steve Austin's show. We've been sitting here talking off microphone. I was telling him kind of my life story. I said, let's get off me and start talking about you again. Because we was talking about California.
Yep.
You was born in California.
I was.
Fairfield, right?
Fairfield, yeah.
Where is Fairfield?
It's up north. It's kind of next to San Francisco and Sacramento, like right in between. I lived there since I was 9, and then we moved to Iowa. From Iowa, we went to Oregon, back to California, then Minnesota, and then Boston, where I kind of found myself, and that's where the legit boss from Boston. And then now I'm in Florida. I'm in Orlando. I have a house out there, and I love it.
How did all that moving around affect you?
Ooh, if it got to me. The number one reason is because I have a brother with autism and disabilities, so we kind of moved around to find the right doctors and have people help us. We went to Iowa because that's where my mom's family is, and hopefully they would help us out with money. That didn't help very, very much. And then we went to Oregon because that's where my birth dad is, trying to help with more money again. We went back to California because, you know, that's where my mom's friends and family are. Nothing there. And we went to Minnesota because they said there was going to be a really good autistic school for my brother. He got abused there. Long story. My mom didn't work for 7 years. We were living in a hotel. Finally, she got a job, got the offer in Boston, and we moved there, and kind of things kind of took off for both of us there in a good way.
So what, with, you know, your brother needing the help they needed,
yep,
with respect to your relationship with people and making friends and stuff like that, as much as you were moving around, did you make many friends, or were you kind of a loner?
I was a huge loner, which is so crazy to me. I think about it now because I went to a regular school from elementary, and then from sixth grade through, you know, graduating, it was all online school. I had no relationships, no friends, no one to talk to. It was just me, my mom, and my brother, and mostly just me and my brother. My mom was is a huge Christian, and trying to find, you know, friends at church, but, you know, I wasn't as crazy into God as she was at the time, and now I am, because, you know, God definitely has got me here and brought me to the places that I needed to be. But, you know, I was such a loner. All I had was legit my brother and wrestling. Until I found wrestling, that was everything for me. You know, at the age of 10, I started watching wrestling, and, you know, that's when we were at in Iowa at the time, and I had friends, and they would always be like, hey, can you come out and play this and that? I'm like, no, I got to stay home. I got to watch wrestling. I need to watch it. Like, can't you record it? I'm like, no. To me, I thought it was live.
Right.
You know, it wasn't, you know, Raw was live, but SmackDown wasn't. I'm like, no, I need to see it live. I need to know what's going on. But the only thing that ever made me happy was wrestling. And I told my mom, like, you know, I'll stay at home. I'll watch Joshua. That's my brother's name. I'll do everything for you. Just give me those 2 hours to myself to watch wrestling and, you know, keep them away so I can have it, you know, be in my room and just watch it. Cause that was my, pretty much my getaway, you know, from escaping, you know, what was going on in my life at the time.
Man, when I think about online schools, I mean, that's kind of such a foreign concept to me because there's a big age gap between myself and you.
Yeah.
You're a youngster. You're only 25 years old. Is it a legitimate system? I mean, could you cheat? I mean, did you cheat?
You can definitely cheat. I did cheat.
I'm not going to tell anybody, and nobody listens to the show anyway.
Yeah, I did cheat. I mean, if you need to find the answers, there's Google right there. I would have my test on one tab, click over to Google. If I didn't know the answer, boom, boom, boom. There it is. Got an A. Easy.
but here's the thing. On your side, you got the answer.
I got
the
answer.
So you learned the lesson, right?
I did, and I still learned. But the biggest thing, you know, I don't want to say to nobody, like, don't finish school, this and that, don't go to college. But I knew what I wanted in life. I wanted to be a professional wrestler. I don't know what I could take up in going to professional wrestling as a college. You know what I mean? But I'm here. If I don't really have a fallback plan, but, you know, I'm putting everything in God's hands. So I don't want to say don't go to college, don't finish school, but, you know.
Yeah, but you know what I always tell people? You know, I always tell people, hey, man, you know, go do what you want to do.
Yeah.
You know, I graduated from high school, and then the only reason I was able to go to college is because I got an athletic scholarship to junior college and then to a regular college. And then when my scholarship ran out, I went to a semester, you know, that I paid for myself. And then I was burned out, and I was already working on a freight dock anyway, driving a forklift. And I said, you know what? You know, I'm going to go do wrestling. And some people ask me, did you have a backup plan? Hell no.
Yeah,
there was no plan B, didn't have a backup. I was going to be a pro wrestler. But I always tell kids today,
always tell
arm yourself with as much education or trade as you can.
Exactly.
So you do have a fallback plan.
Right.
Once you finish your online studies, that's when you got into wrestling school? Or was there any thoughts of going to college? Or did you have, I know you wanted to be a wrestler, but it's such a hard thing to go and do. Were you interested in doing or being anything else?
Kind of, sort of. I don't know. So to me, I feel like I've been training to be a wrestler since I was 10 in a weird way. I did everything I could to study it. You know what I mean?
When you say study, how so?
I would watch everything from New Japan to every type of wrestling that I could find. I would do it. When I was 12, I emailed so many wrestling schools everywhere, even in Canada, New Jersey. I'm like, can you please train me? Can you train me? Can you train me? Can you train me? They're like, how old are you? I'm like, 12? No, you got to be 16. You got to be 18. And of course, my mom would not let me do it at the time. So at 16, I found an MMA school because I watched the RVD DVD and he did MMA. And I'm like, oh, maybe if I get flexible and I do this, that would help me with wrestling. And it does. You know, they teach you how to roll and all that stuff. So when I joined wrestling school, that came very easy and naturally, even bumping. They'll teach you how to fall in MMA. So I always felt like I was always training myself to be a wrestler since I was 10. I would rent DVDs on how to be a pro wrestler. I would take bumps in on my mattress, all these little things. But, you know, my brother went to acupuncture, and the doctor was like, you're really good at this. You're really great with people with autism. You're really calm. You're a good helper. Maybe you're interested in something like this. I'm like, maybe. And he told me that he would teach me. So I was going towards that route, finding an acupuncture school, but wrestling always came first.
Are you a person that if you're getting a little banged up or dinged up, will you go get acupuncture
absolutely.
Done?
Yeah, and I feel like it helps me a lot. It, like, relieves pain. I'm not really big on taking meds and all this stuff. I'm more on, like, the Eastern medicine type of field.
And that's
it helped
thing.
My brother a lot.
He won't be one of the many individuals who got strung out on a bunch of gimmicks.
Yes. It's always helped me. So I've seen what it done for him and people with autism. It was hard at first to get him, you know, to stay calm and, you know, to wait for an hour with these needles in your head. But it does help a lot. I've noticed a difference.
My neighbor, guy lives one house down from me is, like, nationally known or internationally known for, like, being an acupuncture specialist. And back in the day, you know, when I first moved here to 316 Gimmick Street, I'd go over there and the dude put the needles in me. I'd lay in there and, like, you know, I don't know if it did anything for me.
Yeah.
But it really helped my wife. She got a bad back.
Yeah.
So, but it's very interesting. I'm always really interested in like the two dudes that must have been, because you're an MMA fan, right?
Yes.
I want to go back to that training. But here's my thing. Like the two dudes, as far as Brazilian jiu-jitsu, like they're in this like little room and they're like, okay, if I do this and I'll be able to tie you up like that.
It's so interesting.
Okay. But so my other thing about acupuncture is who's the dude that says, okay,
yeah,
I'm going to get this needle and I'm going to stick it in this little gimmick right here. And you know, all the little neural pathways, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
But the evolution of that or who thought of it?
You can say that to everything then.
I know.
And I do that to myself and I'm like, huh, like, why is there a, and it's stupid, I don't want to start, but I talk to Bailey about it sometimes when we're driving. I'm like, wow, look at that. I wonder how that came about, or how did that come about, or even a dumb thing that we talked about recently, like, why there's the, I don't see Dalmatians anymore. Where are they? Did they get extinct? Like, you know what I mean?
You don't see too many Dalmatians.
No, where do they go?
I think they started charging them too much for the spots.
But I always ask myself little questions like that.
Okay, speaking of spots, I want to get back to my original MMA question. But speaking of spots, you know, I was thinking, you know, back in the day, you know, when you watched the earlier pro wrestling stuff, mm-hmm. you know, it was guys just basically grappling. And then, you know, they had those real crappy mm-hmm. ropes. So who was the dude that finally started saying, okay, man, let's start using these ropes? And when did the high spot started being called a high spot?
Yeah.
Back to the question. Your MMA training, how far did you get with that?
So,
are you like a lethal weapon?
No, I'm not. So I forget what it was. It wasn't like judo the first thing I tried when I was like 13. I got to a brown belt, which I wasn't really that great. But I did love just like rolling and falling and pretending like it was something with wrestling. That was my favorite thing. And grappling was awesome. And then when I moved to Boston, I went to an MMA school called City of Tong, and I did more Muay Thai, and I loved it, and Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. I'm like, this is awesome, until we started sparring, and I legit got punched in the face. I'm like, no, I still want to look pretty for wrestling. I don't want to get punched in the face. Don't hit me so hard. So it wasn't until then, and then I started joining wrestling school when I was 18. I was like, okay, I have to stop doing MMA, because I don't want to get punched in the face for real.
Right.
So I took that, and I just wanted MMA to help me get used to wrestling.
It's funny, people always ask me, you know, because I'll be on Twitter while the UFC pay-per-views are going on, and people text me or email me, hey, man, if you'd have got onto MMA back in the day, you think you would have been in the UFC? I'm like you. I don't like getting hit in the face.
Yeah, I don't like getting hit
in the
face.
I like to think of myself as a pretty tough guy.
Me too.
Tough with the respect of being inside the squared circle and being able to endure the schedule and go through the grind.
Exactly.
So here's the question. Nobody likes getting, well, fighters are wired different. I guess everybody's wired to do what they do.
Yeah.
But I didn't like to be punched in the face. But once I got into wrestling school, it was Chris Adams Wrestling School, the Sportatorium in Dallas, Texas. It was after the Saturday television taping mm-hmm. that went live that night, or live to tape. And so all the people would get out of the building. All the students would roll in. It would be gentleman Chris Adams and a guy named Chico who would put us through the paces. It was the normal tumbling drills, the backwards, you know, rolls, the forward rolls, the, you know, the opposite shoulder rolls, and then that flat back bump.
Yep.
And it was running the ropes. And, you know, to me, when I started doing that, and I was coming from a football background, track and field, we didn't have wrestling where I grew up at, but just something about being in that ring, and I believe we were in an 18-footer. It was an 18-foot ring, because 16-foot are very efficient and they're so fun to work in. But they can be a pain in the ass, but they're so, you can never blow up at a 16-footer. If you do, you're really in bad shape. And then when you get that 20x20 in WWE, you've got all this room to create this masterpiece or stink the joint out. But I loved taking bumps. And so sometimes, it was like, I brought up a story the other day, Tough Enough, when I hosted that in 2011, Miss America. Oh, I can't remember her name.
Yeah. When she did the forward roll.
But she, you know, that flat back, you see it in people's faces. I don't mean to single her out, because there's many who think they want to be a pro wrestler. But all of a sudden you start hitting that mat, and it just ain't some people's cup of tea.
Right.
But how was it for you going from, okay, I don't want to be punched, but now let's talk about the flat backs.
So how I joined, it was like almost like a fantasy camp. And I remember I saw it when I was 17. I was about to turn 18. And I was like, oh, God, I have 3 months to prepare. So I started working out, getting ready. Like, I thought it was do or die. I thought I was going to be in there with, like, people like you or Batista or all these big guys. And I remember I walked into the school, and I was like, what I saw all these kids dressed up like Matt Hardy and Jeff Hardy, and I'm like, oh my God. And I'm like, I kind of got this in the bag, I thought. I was the only girl, and they taught us how to roll, how to hit the ropes, how to get in and out of the rings, and then came the bumping. And I was like, okay, you got this, don't be afraid. And I kind of just like slid and didn't take a good bump because I was so scared of knocking myself out. Yeah. I didn't understand about tucking your chin and like taking that bump. Mm-hmm. So afterwards, whatever, I didn't do a good job bumping, but they gave me this scholarship for the 3 months free training. A week later, I tried bumping again. I wasn't good at it. And I was so mad at myself. I was like, this is your dream. What are you doing? You're scared of taking a bump? This is what you wanted since you were 10. So what I did, I took my mattress from upstairs. I brought it down to my brother's room, put it on top of his mattress, and I just bumped for hours on this mattress. The next day at training, I went in. I was like, okay, boom. I'm like, that was pretty easy. That wasn't that bad. And I just loved it. I love taking bumps. And you know, when you're brand new, your trainers are always like, don't do too many bumps. You kids are so stupid. This and that. I'm like, I love it. Why not? And now getting older, I'm like, okay, I should have cut out some of these bumps. Yeah. But, I enjoy bumping. I love wrestling. I love telling a story and creating magic and, you know, captivating fans. That's what I love about this business so much, is that you can make them hate you or love you, and you know, just be so glued to the television, being like, what's next? I love wrestling so much. I feel like I was put on this earth to do it.
What were you were studying the business. You started studying with a keen interest. You started watching at 10.
Yeah.
But you were okay. You were, it seems to me that you were watching the process, and you're like, okay, did you know that it was entertainment, or were you under the mindset that this is real, or it's kind of real, or where were you? Because when I was watching as a kid, it was real, but this is back when it was the Stone Ages.
Yeah. So I didn't know that it was really fake until I was 12. Of course, you know, you tell people you love wrestling.
Fixed.
Fixed.
Yeah.
I don't want to say, yeah.
Yeah. Because, hey, we hurt too much.
We do.
Yeah.
Since I was 12. And you know, when you tell people you love wrestling, they're like, oh, that fake stuff? Oh, which kind of wrestling? I'm like, the WWE type. You know, that's fake or fixed. I'm like, wait, no, it's not. And it wasn't really till I was 12 and going into online school and discovering the internet, yeah, where you learn about everything and you go, wait, the Undertaker's real name is Mark Calloway? And you're like, what? Yeah. That's when I realized, yeah, wrestling is fixed and not too real. When you use the internet, and you're like, people have real names. They have real lives. And wait, what? Like, this was planned storyline, and you hear all these dirt sheets and all this stuff, and you're like, oh, it's different, huh?
So how was this wrestling school? I mean, who were the trainers? And how were you as a person who was trying to learn the business?
Yeah.
Were you adaptive? Did you soak it all up and you were natural?
I did. I wanted to learn it all. I had three trainers. It was Brian Fury, who owns the school now. It's New England Pro Wrestling Academy. Handsome Johnny and Brian Malonis.
So was Handsome Johnny handsome?
No. Okay. Sorry. His name is Hanson now.
Everybody that's handsome really isn't
handsome.
It's
not at all.
Beautiful Bobby, who is one of my all-time favorites, was not beautiful.
Yeah.
He was Bobby Eaton, who was a wonderful human being, but one of the funniest guys I ever met. Anyway, go ahead.
So it was great having three.
I had to ask.
Yeah, it was great having three different trainers because they were so different. You know, Malonis treated me like a daughter, but, you know, these boys didn't want to hit me. I was the only girl in the school. And he's like, no, you're going to come in here and you're going to treat her like everybody else. You're going to take her, slam her, body slam her, all this stuff. Handsome was a little mean to me. but in wrestling, you need to have tough skin. And Brian Fury, man, after every single class, I would get in that car with my mom and I would cry all the way home because I'm like, man, this guy is so mean. But I learned the most from him because his knowledge is just top to bottom the best, and everything he taught me, like, I just wanted to be the best because I wanted to show him how badly I wanted this. Like, he was trying to break people to see if they wanted to stay in this business,
right.
And I knew in my heart this is exactly what I wanted to do, but I remember crying after every single class, and it wasn't until like a year after I was just like, you know what, no, you belong here, you're doing better than these guys, and you're doing it, you're getting it, you belong here.
Well, when you were crying and then driving home with your mother, did you ever think about quitting?
Never.
Still didn't have a plan B.
No.
You're going to be a wrestler.
I was going to be a wrestler.
Entertainer.
Yeah. And it was crazy. You know, back then they were still doing bra and panty matches. So going to class and, you know, the guys would be like, oh, did you see that Playboy match? You're going to do that? That's what you're going to do on Raw when you get signed, right? I'm like, no, that's not what I want to do. I want to go to Japan. I have, you know, other dreams of going to Mexico and all this stuff. And it really wasn't until I got an email from a Tough Enough cast, and I told one of my trainers, and he was like, how did you get that? I'd rather watch my next door neighbor than watch you. You're boring. You're this and that. And I was like, what the? And that was instantly changed me back to wanting to be in the WWE. I'm like, I'm going to show you. And then what, maybe like 6 months later, I got an extra work as WWE in Boston. And again, they're like, how did you get that? I'm like, because I did it. I did it myself. And the head trainer, not the head trainer, but the guy who owned the wrestling school was kind of the head guy that chose who was going to be an extra in Boston. And I asked him if I could. He's like, you're not ready. And I was like, okay. And I just found the email on myself, by myself. I emailed Ty Bailey at the time. And I was like, hey, you guys are coming in town. I would love to be an extra. Got an email legit 10 minutes later. You're in. I was like, it's that easy? It's so easy if you have a dream. If someone's saying, like, you can't do it, you got to do it on your own and see.
Right.
You got to put your heart out there and just, you know, hope you get that chance. And just that realizing that after getting an email after 10 minutes, after a guy told me I couldn't do it, I had to do it on his terms, I was like, why? And I think that's what's wrong with this. I don't say what's wrong with the business, but I feel like too many people wait for their opportunities instead of taking the opportunity and getting it out on their own. And I feel like that's what made the women here now, is why people are talking about it all the time, because we weren't going to sit back and wait for something to be handed to us. We're going to take the opportunity that we were given and make it 100 times more. So that's why I feel like people are talking about us so much more, because we wouldn't sit back and wait for someone to be like, okay, you're just going to have this basic 5-minute match and that's it. And this is what you're going to be handed. And, you know, you're going to be a good soldier and just play your role. You know, for me, coming to WWE, I always wanted to do something more. And I always say this in interviews, but I did write in my notebook when I was 10 that I wanted to be the greatest women's wrestler of all time. That was the goal. And it's so crazy being here at 25 and getting all these opportunities of having first time evers and, you know, having people buy tickets to see you. It's still mind-boggling to me that I'm in the position that I am and people care about watching women's wrestling now.
Are you still writing your journal? Or your...
I do. I still
man,
carry a
awesome.
Journal. Yeah.
Please keep doing that. I always tell a lot of the guys or anybody I talk to, is, man, keep some kind of journal.
You do,
just write some stuff down that you did. Even if it's just two or three lines, if you don't have a big attention span or just so you have some recollection, man, if it's just like, okay, man, like Anaheim tonight, L.A. tomorrow, Phoenix, Arizona the next day, the house, who you worked with, you know, how you got there, whatever. Because, man, down the road, you're looking
look
at
back.
A book. Down the road, I mean, you know, you're looking at just stuff because eventually you'll probably be like me. You'll forget half the stuff.
Oh, I do so all the time now.
Logged as a memory. Go back to, Brian Fury, Handsome Johnny, those guys. Coming out of school, getting on the indie scene, you were working as Mercedes VK?
KV.
Yeah, sorry.
It's all
Mercedes
right.
KV. I was close.
It's close.
God dang it, so close. But so far. Tell me about your style, what you were doing back then as opposed to the work that you're doing in ring now as the legit boss, Sasha Banks.
A huge difference. I don't even like thinking about it because I was just a very happy little baby face, so full of joy, feeling like, yeah, I made my dreams. Let's go get it. My style was anything and everything. I wanted to jump off the top rope and do dives and, you know, take all these risks. But I wouldn't say I had one style. I just this very bland baby face, doing all the moves that I wanted to do, not really understanding, you know, telling a story and everything. And that was the same person that came into FCW when she got signed. Same. I was just happy to be there. Doing my job, this and that, until finally I was just like, I need more. I need a character. I need a character because that's what the fans, you know, connect to. Once they connect to that, then they'll start, you know, appreciating your work. And again, I wasn't being used. I was just more just being a good hand. And it wasn't until we were doing NXT tapings, and it would be like legit the same every month. I would be like, hey, to the writers, what am I doing this week? Oh, you have a match with Bailey. Okay, cool. Next month, what do I have this week? A match with Bailey or a match with this person. And I'm like, am I ever going to have a story or go anywhere? And they're always like, no, you're a really good wrestler. You're really good at making these girls look good. And I took that as such like a stab to the heart. And I'm like, I didn't come here to be a good hand. I didn't come here just to be a person, I don't want to say put over, just to make people look good. I came here to be a superstar. And I took that to heart, and I was like, you know, I went home with my fiance at the time, and I'm like, we need to write all these characters. And I talked to Tyler Breeze too, because he was in the same boat as me, not having a character. And he told me the same thing. He's like, have different names, have different characters, have different bios for them, and go to promo class and see what sticks. The first thing that came to mind was The Boss, because I was like, you know, you need to accept it that you're Snoop Dogg's cousin. People call him The Boss all the time, so I'm like, I'm going to be this flashy, you know, cocky character, because truly, I don't like saying it. That's what I am. I knew at the time that I was the best woman wrestler in that place. The best. And if I believed in my heart, but if I showed it to these people, I bet that they would believe me, because if I believed myself, how can you not believe me? So the first promo I did was in front of Dusty, and I was like, I'm the meanest. I'm the baddest. I'm the prettiest. I am the boss of NXT. And I remember Dusty seeing that. He's like, that's the sassy Sasha that I wanted to see all along. Because I remember doing promo class all the time, and I would cry. I would be a nerd. I didn't feel comfortable talking until I found this boss. And he's like, I always pictured you being sassy. I want to see sassiness. And I couldn't find my sassiness until I found the legit boss. And every week I would work on my promos, and he would just be like, there's something to this. And then
absolutely. I used it. But going back to when they said, you know, you asking them, hey, do you have any plans for me? No, you're good at making people look good. I mean, that's a compliment.
It is,
in a way. But it also means, it's kind of like, you know, the first few times when I could have come to WWF back in the day, I did not, because I knew that they saw me as a mechanic.
Right.
And yeah, I could have good matches with people, but that's as far as they saw me. And so on the third time, you know, that's when I eventually came. You know, they put the ringmaster on me. That sucked. But it was a foot in the door. And they call me rather than me call them.
Right.
So, you know, and, you know, WCW had fired me. I could only stay in ECW for so long.
Right.
The learning tree of Paul Heyman, which was instrumental in me trying to learn about what a character needed to be, or at least how to cut a promo. One time, a long story, I've told it many times, but as it pertains to what you just said, we were riding to Memphis, Tennessee. It was myself and Dr. Tom Pritchard and Primetime Brian Lee. And Tom looked over at me and he goes, Steve, he goes, what's so stunning about stunning Steve? And I had never thought about what a character was. That was just a name that Dutch Mantel had given me, you know, when I turned heel. And I didn't know, because there wasn't nothing stunning about me. I wasn't particularly a great looking guy back in the day. And the gimmick, the wardrobe I had was nickel and dime. I was just a cocky, arrogant guy. That was it. That was my whole shtick. And, you know, I would ask Ricky Steamboat when he came down to WCW, you know, when I got up there, I said, what am I missing? He goes, I don't think you're missing anything, Steve. I was missing a character.
Right.
When I got a chance to unleash and harness and create and cultivate and grow Stone Cold, that's when it turned into what it turned into. So when you started coming up with the legit boss and you're working with Dusty Rhodes, mm-hmm. and you go through promo class, and all of a sudden you've kind of got the sassiness. And I was looking for a word to describe that, because I love watching you walk down, because you have the swagger. And so now we call it the sassiness, but I see the confidence and the cockiness as well. It's funny to me, and not funny, haha, but right now you're working baby.
Yep.
I love Sasha Banks, the legit boss, as a heel.
Yeah.
Because I feel that that's when you're on full on with your persona, your character, your system.
Yeah.
I always liked working heel. I was a babyface. It brought a lot of gray area into the black and white world. And then, you know, because of the time, you know, then I turned into this monster baby through positioning and Jim Ross's way of talking about me. So I was a different baby. So talk to me about working baby and working heel, and what I know you love. I know you love to be in the ring, period.
Yeah.
Heel or baby, which you prefer being?
I've been thinking about that a lot lately, because usually I just say both, just to get that bland answer. But I do enjoy working heel. I feel more comfortable. I feel more free. And I feel like I'm being more of myself, because I can really be like, yeah, I'm the shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which I feel like it's hard to be as a baby face. But in today's day and age, I feel like all these baby faces are really the heels, and all these heels are really the baby faces, because that's what the fans are cheering now. The fans are just cheering the heels and are booing the baby faces, because they want to see people kick ass. They want to see them saying stuff and doing stuff in more of a gritting way than being like, hey, yeah, I'm going to kick your butt because I'm a good guy. Yeah. And I'm going to play by the rules. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm going to play by the rules.
Because that's what we do.
Ugh, yeah. It drives me insane. I hate it.
But it's hard.
It's very hard. And it took me a while. And I'm still learning to be a baby face every day. And the only, I don't want to say the only reason I love it, but the number one reason I love it is the kids. I love seeing little kids dress up as you. And
that's one of the things I love about your gimmick, the legit boss when you have the thing on your hand.
Yep.
Just the whole persona, the swagger. I mean, there's a ton of ways to merchandise that character or persona or you. And so I just think it's awesome. The legit boss, Sasha Banks. Sasha Banks has a ring to it. How did you come up with that name?
Very random. I think it was like my first month in FCW, and Rob Naylor at the time, he said, we need a list of names, and I gave him a list. And Sasha was a different last name, and I don't remember. And Banks was a different first name. And then a week later, like, you're Sasha Banks. And I was like, hey, I like that. It has a nice ring to it. It sounds like a star name, so I like it.
When did you come up with the legit boss?
Well, I came up with just the boss.
Yep.
And I think it was the takeover where I interrupted Charlotte and Bailey's match at the end, and they were making me a shirt and they needed to trademark something, so they just said legit boss. And I was like, okay. You know, when you first hear stuff, you're not really used to it.
Yeah.
Same thing with my first like theme song. I'm like, I didn't like it. I thought it sounded really girly. You got to give it a little bit to like pick up and kick. And I'm like, okay, I'm just happy that I have a shirt.
Right.
And then finally, just kind of like, it's easy. You know, legit boss, you know, that's me.
Right.
If anybody says the boss, you know, it's Sasha Banks, which is really cool.
It was funny when I came up with the Stone Cold Steve Austin thing, you know, the ringmaster thing. I gave it a chance 5 or 6 months. I knew it was going to go nowhere. Came up with Stone Cold Steve Austin thing. I pitched it to Jerry Briscoe. He called Vince. I got the clearance. Okay, do it. I'm from Victoria, Texas, which my thinking on Victoria, Texas was I actually used to live there, and everybody always wants to be from this big, glorious town. I wanted to be from a regular small town, but Victoria has a cool ring to it, right? A little je ne sais quoi. So anyway, I said, okay. And it's like they just almost like saying, you know, this kid ain't going to make it.
Yeah.
Let's just go ahead and let him see what we can do with this gimmick. And then Razor Ramon, Scott Hall, super guy, he goes, Stone Cold Steve Austin, huh? He goes, what's that all about? And I knew what it was about.
Yeah.
I didn't get a chance to express it yet, but I knew, you know, I had a feeling once I came up with that it was going to be dynamite.
Yeah.
And I just said, just bear with me. I said, it'll work. And it did. And so the same thing with your gimmick.
Yeah.
First of all, when you started NXT and all of a sudden was the match, that match was, that you had in Bailey at TakeOver in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
That was when NXT.
Yes.
Man,
that was
awesome
on the main
match.
Roster.
It
Thank
was a
you.
Match of the year. And Bailey was next door. We watched it on television. We put you over like $1 million because it was an awesome match. And it was a great performance.
Thank you.
Do you think that's been the high point of your career? Or have you had a higher moment than you that happened maybe on the road somewhere personally? Because when I watched that match, and I remember hugging you after WrestleMania 32. Y'all ripped
so
it up.
Sad.
That was cool.
Yeah.
But when I watched that match, and it was just that match blew me away because I love the story. Everything was just so spot on, the offense, the defense, the story, going after the injured body part, you know, just the whole match.
Yeah.
Everybody thought it was what it was. It was spectacular. Is that the highest moment?
I do. I do think that's the highest moment because I remember just thinking, okay, I'm on the main roster now. NXT was my home. It's really where I found myself and where people really began to want to see women work more. And at the time, I knew that was like my last match, and I wanted to go out with a bang. You know, they were promoting it as me and Bailey as the second main event, but I'm like, hell no, I'm going to steal this show.
Yep.
Again, I don't want to sound cocky, but I knew that I was the best, not just women. I wanted to be the best overall, and I wanted people talking about that match. And, you know, I remember telling Bailey my idea of wanting to do the Rana, and she's like, no, absolutely not. And I was like, no, I want to do this. This is how I want to go out. Please let me do this. And, you know, it's crazy with other takeover matches. You kind of have like a week before to even think about it and talk about it. But I was on the main roster, so we didn't see each other until that day, which I think made it even more special. It's like, we didn't get to walk over anything or try anything. And it was so magical. And I remember before I went out, I started bawling, crying. I'm like, oh my God, this is the biggest, you know, arena that we've ever wrestled in front of at that time. And the moment that I got out of that car, I never felt so relaxed in my whole wrestling career. The moment I stood out, I was just like, this feels so right. And I got into that ring and I just heard those fans chanting, we want Sasha or we want Bayley. And I was just like, oh, this is going to be so awesome.
Because you got them
from the very beginning. Before we even locked up, I know it was going to be something special.
All right, let's take a quick pause for the calls and give big ups to True Car. When you're looking to buy a car, it's important that you're getting real pricing on actual inventory. Often enough, this is not the case, as people configure cars online only later to find out they're not available. But with True Car, you get real pricing on actual inventory. This is not pricing from True Car, but from an actual dealer, and even more so, a local certified dealer of your choosing that is committed to offering you a competitive market price. True Car users are more likely to enjoy a faster buying process when they connect with True Car certified dealers. There are over 13,000 True Car certified dealers nationwide. When you're ready to buy, visit True Car to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features are not available in all states. And while we're here, you might as well get some car insurance for that vehicle and save hundreds of dollars in the process. All you have to do is go to GEICO.com, and in 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on car insurance. You can finish listening to this podcast and immediately after go to GEICO.com and get yourself set up. Extra money in your pocket? It may just be the most rewarding thing you do today.
Podcast One is your home for the biggest names in pro wrestling. We've got the Animal, Dave Bautista, with Jim Ross on the Ross Report.
I don't want to do a one-off. I want to go and I want to wrestle. You know, I want to be a part of the program, and I love it.
The longest reigning WWE Divas champion, Nikki Bella, with Lillian Garcia.
There's that excitement, and when you have a great match, you're like, oh my God, that's how you feel when you have a great dance with someone.
Hard-hitting wrestling journalism with Wade Keller.
Find out not just what's happening, but also decoding why it's happening and whether it's good for fans and the bottom line.
And the unfiltered and unpredictable thoughts of Vince Russo.
They dictate to us what is considered big time.
Get all these podcasts and more exclusively on the new Podcast One app, podcastone.com, and on Apple Podcasts.
The Steve Austin Show. The Steve Austin Show.
There's something about some of the premier performances, you know, that I was able to turn in on the big stage. You know, like 13 would be one of my particular favorites, and 17 with The Rock, where you just show up. And for some reason, you know, this is going to be your night. And I think once I got my confidence as Stone Cold, and it started really growing. And I remember one night we were in Chicago, which was kind of a stronghold for me for some reason. In the building we used to work back in the day was a Rosemount Horizon. And it had those, you know, the ceiling, I guess, is wooden beams, and the acoustics in that building are just phenomenal. And the people in Chicago are the greatest wrestling fans of all time. And man, all of a sudden, you know, this Austin chant broke out, and I was like, shit's on, man. Yeah. I mean, so that's when I started getting my confidence, going back to what I was talking about. So, man, I never got nervous before anything after that, because I knew no matter what I was going to do, you know, it was going to work. Now, don't get me wrong. I had to go out there and perform and do it. Yeah. You know, it wasn't a layup. I had to perform, but I was locked in. And at that point from then on, I was in a zone. So that night in Brooklyn, you were in the zone. You just knew you had them from the get-go.
Yeah.
Nowadays, going out on the Monday Night Raw or doing promos and stuff backstage, what's the nerve factor for you? Things going through your mind? Hey, I can't mess this up. Where are you?
I'm always still nervous all the time. There's moments where I'm less nervous and I'm more like, you know what, you're just going to have fun. Especially when I don't know what I'm doing or where I'm going. Those are the moments where I'm less nervous. I'm just like, what else are you going to do? Just have fun. But every time I go out there through the curtain, I'm like, I get that little jittery thing. And then I'm like, no, you belong here. So once I do them in my entrance, I always feel like I'm at home. But I think that's the biggest thing you pointed on is confidence.
And watching in the match with Bayley from NXT, man, there's almost no communication. You can't see the communication. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the illusion. That's part of the magic. What do you do to try to protect your calls? Because a lot of times you'll just see someone yell across the ring. And sometimes, you know, that has to happen.
Yeah.
But you're good about protecting your stuff.
I am. I think that's part of the business. It's part of the art is knowing when to call your spots and the right moments to call your spots. And especially, I think it also depends on the experience of the person you're with. You know, with Bailey.
And chemistry.
With Bailey, I feel like we don't even need to talk at all. I know where I need to be. She knows where I'm going to be. Or if it's someone newer, you know, I feel like I know where to put my spots and the opportunities where I can talk to them and make sure that they're okay going into the next thing and make sure they're not lost. So that's what I love. Like wrestling, man, you can do everything and anything and try to make it work and make magic. And telling stories is my favorite thing.
Okay, so let's talk about the magic and, and telling the stories. Sometimes I think today, and I love the way the business has evolved and the generation that you guys are in. And
it's a crazy generation nowadays.
The guys and gals, I mean, just athleticism is just beyond what it used to be. And through every generation, it just keeps getting better. But sometimes there becomes a point where there's so much stuff put into a short time span, it becomes a little much. And so then you start to see, you know, because people start, there's tells. It's like, okay, I can see what they're doing before they even do it. And so that kills the illusion for me, because even though, you know, I'm out of the business, but not since 2003, I consider myself still in the business because I love it and I watch it and that's where I'm from.
Yeah.
So I'm still in the business. But when I see that, I'm like, oh, it's driving me crazy, because you've got to protect the illusion.
Yeah.
I know you got to do a little bit more stuff because it's short attention span theater.
Yeah.
But you got to have that illusion. You see what I'm saying?
All the time. And it's so crazy. Like me and
And there's a fine line.
There's a fine line. Me and Bailey talk about this all the time. And I feel like we're getting old, but we go back.
Oh, Jesus.
I know. But we go back to being like what we were taught in NXT and like working with like Terry Taylor, and he's so old school and like, mm-hmm. slow down, take your moments, this and that. And if you watch matches nowadays, and I hate Nick, like I hate being like that person, like, oh, well, it wasn't that great because I did this and this, this wrong. Ugh. I try to just enjoy it as a fan, but you know, if they did not do so many spots and if they took maybe 3 or 4 moves out where they could have took more time to selling, they will, like, they could have made the match so much more. And I feel like we're almost, I don't say we're giving too much to the audience, but you know, we're giving quality pay-per-view matches on Monday Night Raw. But you know, even for me, if I see like a Seth Rollins or Cesaro, I want to do those type of matches too. So in my head, I'm thinking, is that more moves? Is it, is it this or is it that? So even as a performer, I get confused on what the audience wants or what, you know, backstage wants, because you see these things and you see what they like and applaud, but you see them go, 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 go. And I try to keep up with the times too. Like what do they want? Do they want more moves, or do they want to go back to the storytelling and see what brought them back to you, you know, to the game of, you know, having fans being invested. So I go back and forth all the time.
But at the end of the day, or just with everything we were talking about, going to something that you said 15 minutes ago, is that character. Mm-hmm. They have to love or hate or identify or understand who, what, where this character's coming from, what molded them,
what's
fires
the
did they walk through, how did this all come to be? So, you know, in doing something, you're trying to elicit a response and with respect to a high spot. But the people doing those high spots are in telling the stories, making the magic, and the magic is the big story unfolding like you want it to.
Right.
You know, you're starting off in this contest and you're going for a win. Wins and losses matter.
Yeah.
Parity booking, in my opinion, is not good. You know, if you want to climb to the top, you got to keep start winning. When I first came to WWF, they would beat me like a drum because I was the mechanic.
Right.
You know, but I was working with Sean and Brett. You know, I was doing a job every single night, but that was cool. I was working with the best and, you know, just working on my persona, which was to come later, because people need to care about the two people in the ring. You know, when you go to a television taping and you've been to a million of them, or just go to a show and these two people get a tryout or whatever, and it's such a hard spot to be in because you've been there.
I've been there.
And all of a sudden, I mean, for all practical purposes, we've all been there. In front of that crowd, you're a nobody. And then you're with another person that, for that crowd, they're a nobody with respect to who and what they are. And they're trying to have a match. And it's just crickets. It's silence. You know, they're like, well, what do we do? Nothing's going to work. And so they just start trying to, you know, do like a demolition derby of things just to try to get a response.
Exactly.
So I think that if people care about the characters, I think it's not more, it's not crazy bumps, it's not a faster paced action. I always believe in intensity. And if somebody cares about you, if what you're doing, your lock up and or your punches or your headlocks, if it's intensity, I think speed matters sometimes in feeding a comeback. But I think the people want reality.
So they can believe that.
They want to believe, man. Because when you turn on a TV, Because it's weird, and I've said this before on past podcasts, but people are watching wrestling and are judging it with a double standard. They're watching, they're judging what they're seeing, but they're also judging the writing.
Everything.
If you put on some show on TV, like I guess The Big Bang Theory is still a big show on TV, which I've never seen, but it's a very popular show. So they're not watching the characters and they're thinking, well, why'd they write so and so to say that?
Right.
But in wrestling, that's what they're doing, or at least the IWC. So, but I believe if you have intensity and you mean what you do and, you know, you're trying to win that match, I think that's what people want. They want reality.
Exactly. I do believe that too. They want to believe, and you need to show them that that is real and that you are trying to win. And that's the biggest thing for me too, is like, if I go back, which is so hard for me to watch my matches sometimes because I'm my biggest critic and I'm like, cringe. Oh, but like, recently, I watched back Survivor Series, and I hated everything I did because I don't know if I didn't believe what I was doing, or if I was just like unsure. You know what I mean? Because sometimes your time gets cut, and you're like, okay, how can I communicate with this person of what I want to do, and will they know if I say this? You know, it was just, I hate that.
The one thing
that, but
what was really hard is when someone says, "Hey, man, you guys are probably gonna get 15 minutes." And then all of a sudden someone comes up to you and says, "Hey, man, y'all got 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And so I was like, well, you just whacked out about 5 minutes of stuff.
And then you're trying to figure out what do you need to take out, what's not important to your story, and what's going to make the most sense.
When did you get a sense that, hey, man, I'm starting to get over? And then when did you say, hey, man, I'm over?
Ew. I don't even like to think that way.
But you had to notice a difference.
I did notice a difference when I was wrestling. I had a match against Emma, and they were chanting Ratchet, and I thought it was Rat Shit. And it's really the first chant that I ever got at NXT, because I was really just getting nothing.
But what is Ratchet?
Like a ghetto girl.
Oh.
Yeah, which I was. That was my character.
Were you working heel?
I was working heel. Okay. It was my first, like...
So they were chanting at you.
Yeah, they were chanting at me. I was like... Okay, well, at the time I thought they were calling me Rat Shit, and then I came to the back, they're like, they're calling you Ratchet and OBT, which in Orlando, that's where the prostitutes stand on the corner. And I was like, oh, well, at least they're chanting. And then the following month, they kept chanting and chanting. I'm like, okay, this is cool. That's this good. Is wrestling.
Yeah. I mean, it's good.
Yeah.
That kind of response.
And it wasn't really till I was going into a story with Charlotte at NXT, and we were getting back and forth chants, and people were caring. And after our match at NXT TakeOver, you know, that's when people really, I feel like, really got with my character and was like hating me. And then more chants, and then I saw more signs, and then I saw more people buy my shirts. And then, you know, we're getting more time at like live events. Yeah. And then it kind of went from there. I'm like, oh, this is awesome.
Hey, man, I was reading, like, Snoop Dogg's your first cousin.
Yes.
Did he help you with the persona? Or?
No, I stole his boss persona.
Oh, tell me about that.
So he's my cousin, but we're not very close. People always think like we're like best friends or like really cousins where we went to each other's houses and got to hang out. No, I didn't meet this guy until maybe I was like 12, and he came to Iowa for a concert. And you know, anytime he came around, we would always go to the concert and this and that. And he told me he loved wrestling, and I told him I love wrestling, and that was our bond. And anytime he went to, you know, he hosted Raw, or if I saw he was, you know, hosting, you know, WrestleMania and doing the Divas match, I was like, please bring me with you. And every time he did, and that was our bond, is the love of wrestling. And we always talked about wrestling, and I always told him that I wanted to be a wrestler when I grew up. And he's like, if that's your dream, you go get it. And it's so crazy that was at WrestleMania 32, he did my entrance, and I was like, yeah. How is this possible? This is so cool. What a dream come true of having a legend in the rap game come out and do your entrance. And it's your family member too. So it's awesome.
I was looking at the rosters for Raw and SmackDown, and just looking at the main roster, at least what's on Wikipedia,
yep.
There's 11 women on each spot, on each show. I know there's more up and coming.
Yeah.
They're bringing some new ones in, introducing new people all the time. So competitive. I mean, it's always about keeping your spot. How's that pressure?
It's very hard. It was much harder when we were doing both Raw and SmackDown. I feel like now that the brand's split, you kind of know who has the spot right now. And I recently learned, like, you're not always going to be number one. And especially with the women's division, we're so small, it's going to cycle. and you're going to have the opportunity to be number one again, and you're going to go back down, and it's legit like a Ferris wheel. So it's not even more of like who's going to be number one. You just like whoever's the champion right now. It's Alexa Bliss. She's going to be number one. Whoever she's in, with the storyline with, that's what it is. That's right. They only really write for the championship match. Hopefully we get some tag team women's championships coming up so we have more of a story right now. But, you know, it's good that having, you know, Paige and the two new girls, finally it's something more. It's something different. It's not about the championship. So right. I'm very interested to know where we're going next. I have no idea. And that's kind of like, you know, going in so blank of not knowing what you're going to do next. But it's exciting to know that it's in a different direction. And hopefully it's leading to something even bigger.
Where are you guys going after, I know you've got Anaheim tonight, mm-hmm. which is a house show. Monday Night Raw is in Los Angeles.
Yes.
And then from where are you going home?
I'm going to San Diego for a tribute to the troops. And then I go to India.
Okay. When y'all going to India? Because I was on your Instagram account.
Tuesday.
And y'all just got back from UK.
We did.
How was that?
Long. Those are so brutal, but they're fun at the same time. But 2 weeks wrestling every single day in a different city or a different town, that stuff is so hard. It'll hit it. Like the second week, you can see the guys' faces where they're just like, don't talk to me. Don't look at me. We're tired of the food. We're tired of not getting the sleep. We're not going to the gym. It's just, it's long.
Sorry. It is. Man, we used to roll over there. And again, this is back in the caveman days, but this is where we used to roll. You've probably seen that picture online of all us guys in
the
back
of the tour
bus. I mean, that was every single night. And Sasha, it didn't matter. Again, it's the Wild Wild West. I don't know what's up these days, but it's a different ball game. Y'all, there's so much more corporate sponsorships and stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, guys were crazy back in the day, and we would be all back there, and it didn't matter because normally the way we did those tours, and y'all are going to many more places than I went to, but we go to the UK for a week, and then we go to Germany for a week, mm-hmm. or Germany for a week, then the UK. And as you know, there's two buses. There's a heel bus and there's a baby bus.
Yeah.
And you still want to protect the integrity of the business. Yeah. So anyway, man, that heel bus. Holy
Rowdy.
Smokes. Yeah, it might have been a babyface bus. Everybody was so edgy back then. It was the attitude era. But God dang, you talk about a party. There was just some, I don't know who was in charge of it or how it worked, but whenever we, you know, you go to the building, you get your, you know, your catering.
Yep.
Then you make your to-go meal. Do y'all still do that?
Yes.
Okay, you make your to-go meal that you're going to eat on the bus when you get to the hotel. And then, you know, we're going to drink all night long. And we did. But whenever we rolled up to any hotel, this is a straight-up shoot. Whether it was UK, England, it didn't matter how far the drive was, whether we drove 2 hours or 6 hours. Mm-hmm. The bar was open when we landed.
Yeah.
And all the boys were in the bar. I mean, it was madness. But going back, you know, to getting to you, the road is brutal.
It's very hard.
And so how you just got back from UK. That's brutal. It's extremely tough. And how long will you be in India?
I think just 3 days. I think.
That's
so, you never know.
Flight. That's one of the few
It's like
places.
15 hours.
I know. That's one of the places I haven't been.
Really?
Yeah. And
yeah.
They're like crazy for wrestling over there.
They are. We have a lot of Indian fans, according to my Twitter, because they tweet me all the time.
Yeah.
But I'm really excited. It's my first time going. And I love going to new places and, you know, meeting new fans and seeing what, you know, how they're going to react over there. It's really different.
Oh, you're a big fan of Japanese wrestling.
Yeah.
Growing up with the All Japan stuff. So you've got a chance to wrestle up in Japan a few times.
Just one,
once.
I'd only done one tour, and it
so
was
how
amazing.
Was it? Did you dig it? Because you know they can lay back.
Yeah, it was everything that I hoped for. I love the culture, I love the food, and even the fans. You know, I think there was only one night where they were kind of quiet, just watching. But other than that, they were
hey,
trying
did
to be
mess
like.
With you?
They didn't really. It didn't really mess with me because
okay.
I've watched it so many times, okay. and I've always heard just the quietness and
yeah,
yay. But I enjoyed it, and I was like, oh, I feel like I belong here. I want to find
But you know, here's something, interesting thought that sometimes when I'm watching some older matches from, or even some of the new stuff from New Japan, but watching All Japan, New Japan from back in the day when a lot of guys, that, you know, from my era were traveling, and watching the new guys from New Japan. Sometimes, you know, and going back to what those people want,
mm-hmm.
you know, sometimes, you know, that guy will start teeing off another guy, and then just all of a sudden that other dude would just fire up. Fire.
Yeah.
I think fire is another thing that people want to see, you know, because to break from the pack, and you have to sell. Everybody's going to sell.
Yeah.
You don't want to oversell, you know, because there's some of that going on right now. But I think, you know, intensity and fire.
Yeah.
I want to believe, but that's one of the things, because a lot of times when I watch some of those, I got a chance to go to Long Beach a few months ago when New Japan came through town. And God dang, I'm going to mess up that guy's name. Their top baby. Okada.
Okada, yeah.
Okada was working with...
was it Kenny?
It was Cody Rhodes.
Oh, Cody,
night.
Yeah. Holy I heard you talking about the match. Yeah, working the leg, right?
Yeah. All of a sudden, man, Okada went into that... I mean, it was like Shakespearean theater, Hamlet.
Yep.
And all of a sudden, man, that crowd started coming. I was like, man, this is a good-looking kid. And that crowd just started, I mean, I was like, son of a gun.
That's an American crowd, too.
I know. But just selling, I'm rambling, yeah. But selling fire intensity, you know, believing. But one of my biggest pet peeves is the oversell and the pander.
Yeah.
You know. Or, you know, you get kicked in the mouth and you just keep, okay, I'm not you, I'm saying, yeah. You know, it's just too much of this. I keep touching my mouth, but it's like, okay, we get it, dude.
So many times.
You got punched in the mouth and you're saying, okay,
but
I just
you can't
got
do it for every cell.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or if I see girls do like the hair bill and they pull out the fake hair, I'm like, how are you going to do that every single time? Because I see no hair on your hands. And they pull out the hair.
Right.
Like, we have to change up our sellings. Every different cell, yeah.
Everybody has a favorite region or a favorite town. Chicago is a stronghold for me.
Yeah.
Every now and then we would go down to Jacksonville, Florida. I just like the Coliseum because it just smelled like wrestling. Texas was good for me. The Garden is special because it's a garden.
Mm-hmm.
Houston Summit, which Joel Osteen now runs out of. we used to wrestle there. Joel Osteen's preaching out there now. Your favorite spots to do battle in?
It's, of course, all the big cities. I feel like that's where the crowd are the rowdiest and the loudest.
And that's good.
It is. And I love, have fun, fans. Have so much, like, just live. Be loud. There's nothing worse than going to an arena that's sold out and they're quiet and just watching. It's the worst feeling ever.
Because you get back what you give.
Yeah, and you're just like, what did I do a good job? Because you guys are not letting me know. You're just quiet watching. So I'm like, did I do my job right?
You know, sometimes we move working some of those B-towns up here in Canada, like Hull.
Yeah.
Hull's Hull, with respect to everybody that lives there. And it's like, God dang, what do you
do? What do you guys want?
Well, what do they come for?
Yeah, exactly.
Did they know that there's some wrestling in that ring? Hey, saying shit.
Exactly.
But favorite market, I mean, like the Garden is a special building.
Garden, of course, because, you know, once they say from Boston, like that crowd just goes and nuts and you're just like, oh, yay. Chicago's always been amazing. I just like all those rowdy crowds where, you know, they'll either boo you or hate you or boo you or cheer you. There's like no in between. I love that.
What do you listen to when you're going down the road? Back in my days, it was country music. And, you know, this is back in the day.
Yeah.
I mean, we filmed one of my DVDs where we started off. We were running Florida. I think we drove down there. It was Jacksonville or Tampa. It was about a 200-mile drive.
Yeah.
And I was driving a Ford F-150 pickup, drinking beer. You know, they had camera guys in the vehicle with me. And, you know, they're asking me questions. I'm talking. And
drinking beer.
Oh, man, it was unbelievable. And as I'm driving down the highway, I mean, it's basically like a spotlight. And this is, I think it's an Austin 316 video, whatever.
Yeah.
That's outlaw.
Yeah.
That's outlaw. You can't drink and drive
you
no
can't,
more.
No.
You weren't supposed to back then. But we were. We was making a video. So the question was, what do you get us to?
I listen to everything, legit everything, from Japanese music, Korean music, rock, hip hop, country. My range is everything. I enjoy everything. I don't have one genre that I just like.
Are you into movies at all, or series?
I do. I love so many shows, and I binge watch them so much that I forget like what I've watched. I love Breaking Bad, Son of Anarchy. Recently, I just finished Stranger Things. What are other things I just finished? Black Mirror. Have you seen that?
What is it?
Black Mirror on Netflix.
No, I didn't see that.
You'll love that.
I watched Walking Dead. Walking Dead was... I
couldn't
still
get into Walking Dead.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I couldn't.
Oh, man.
But
Breaking Bad is number one.
Yeah, I can't be the type of person of everybody's talking about it.
Right.
I have to wait a little bit. Even though Stranger Things, everyone was talking about, I'm like, that's a really good show.
Right.
I kind of have to wait a couple years and get on the bandwagon. So maybe once it's over, I'll get on Walking Dead.
I'll give it a try. I'm always late to everything,
yeah.
Just because I don't really watch too much TV. Did you watch Narcos?
I did. I finished it finally.
Did you see season three?
Not season three.
Okay,
we just watched
the last episode of season two just so we could remember the finish.
Yeah.
So now we're about to kick that off. But man, that dude that played what's his name, was awesome.
He did awesome. Incredible.
And his wife was badass.
Yeah.
So now that they're, I remember the finishing scene, now the guy's in there, the guy that they booted out, I forgot his name, dude with the mustache, is his name?
Yeah.
The Cali Cartel.
Yep.
So that's what the Cali Cartel, the third season will be about the Jesus Christ, cut that out, Sean. Leave it in. I popped Sasha. The Cali Cartel, damn it. Steel Chair City. You enjoy being on the road?
I do.
You're 25. You've been doing this for 7 years.
Yeah.
Back in the day, I didn't have long-term plans. Do you?
I think about it a lot because I go back and forth on what I want to do. Sometimes I'm like, I just want to retire and be a producer. I really love creating, you know, matches. But then I see what they go through, and I'm like, I do not want to do that. I do not want to be yelled at or the stress of it all. But I really, really enjoy helping putting matches together. And I think Bailey wants to be a trainer. I think she's so good and patient and, like, really good at explaining stuff. And I like explaining what I think makes moments. So maybe we would be a good team like that. But that's a goal, maybe. I go back and forth. Or I just like to retire and just lay on my couch the rest of my life and do nothing.
But how many years do you feel like you have in you? Because, I mean, at 25, I'm thinking, hey, you got at least 10 more years left in you. But you started so young.
I did.
But my point is, I'm a huge football fan. Are you a football fan?
I am. I like the Steelers.
Man, I like the Steelers. And they've got a good team this year.
They do.
And they started off not so good, and now they're kicking ass. And of course, back in the day when Terry Bradshaw was playing and Franco Harris was a running back, I mean, you know, when they won 4 Super Bowls, you know, they were my favorite team.
Yeah.
You know, my dad was always cheering for the Dallas Cowboys. So everybody, they thought, well, I was supposed to be a Dallas Cowboys fan because I was from Texas.
That's
no,
what I was
a Steelers fan.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So, but now I float all over the place.
Yeah.
I like
just enjoy watching
players,
right?
And coaches and programs and stuff like that. But my point is, I mean, like a lot of times, you know, the premier running backs at 30, in 31, I mean, 80% of them are out the door.
Right.
So you're 25. In 5 or 6 years, you'll be 30 or 31.
Yeah. Scary to think about.
And then these guys are getting out so young.
Yeah.
I've got the one guy from San Diego, the linebacker. He's now an NFL analyst. So now he made the transition. I mean, these guys got to start. They've got to start a whole new life at 30, 31.
And still
get
young.
Away from what they're you know, good at.
I don't want to put a number on it because whenever God tells me to, but at the same time, I also don't want to be one of those people who went past their time, which kind of scares me because I love this so much. But I don't know. I've done a lot at 25 and I wonder like how much more can I do? So I don't know. I'll leave it in God's hands.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't want to be like 30 and I'm done. I would love to be a mother one day. Not anytime soon.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, whenever God tells me it's time to hang up my wrestling shoes.
What kind of hobbies you got? What other than sports entertainment, I will say professional wrestling, do you have a passion for? I mean, for me, it's outdoors. It's four-wheel drive.
Yeah.
It's just I love hunting and stuff like that. I love being alone. I love being outdoors.
For I love Sasha being alone, Banks. Too. It's so sad. All I have is wrestling. When I'm at home, I watch wrestling. That's all I think about. Most recently, the kind of a hobby. I don't know if you care because you're a guy, but I like makeup. I like
I don't
girls love makeup.
I love makeup.
Well,
I noticed a lot of your Instagram posts.
Yeah.
I know you're really into fashion and some of the stuff you wear. So
well, you just have to post because that's free stuff.
Yeah, I get it.
So, you know, if they send you free stuff, you got to do that post.
But also, I mean,
you got to look nice to post it, I think.
But you're passionate about it.
I wouldn't say that's a big passion, but I do love makeup. That's the number one thing I think that kind of gets me away from wrestling because it's like it takes an hour to do. But other than that, I just enjoy being at home. I love watching my Netflix and my Hulus and like binge watching shows. And I love just being around my husband and just. I have a really nice backyard. I love sitting out there and just looking at the trees and the nature.
Hey, man, I always tell people when I came up with this Stone Cold Steve Austin thing, I'm a very competitive person from my athletic endeavors in football and stuff like that. And so, you know, I didn't talk all that shit, you know, when I was out in football field. But, I mean, the effort was the same. You know, when the bell rang, you know, I was a high-effort guy. I want to make my stuff look good, and I want to have a compelling match that is believable. So Jake the Snake Roberts way back in the day, you know, there are some guys observing him, some guys that brought their friends to the arena. Mm-hmm. And the question was, hey, man, who's your favorite guy? I said, oh, man, that guy over there, Jake the Snake Roberts. Why do you like Jake so much? Yeah. Well, you know, he sits over and smokes a cigarette. And then to warm up, he just moves his arms like this two times. And he goes to the ring carrying a snake. And that's pretty cool. So that was Jake's MO of getting ready to go to the ring. He was relaxed. For Stone Cold Steve Austin, I didn't need to go crazy, bang my head against the door, nothing like that. I need to spin myself up. Hey, man, that glass broke. Shit was on. And his BMF walked down to the ring. So what I'm getting at is the Stone Cold character was just me turned up, kind of, you know, when I'm talking to you, and I love talking about wrestling so much, I get caught up in it. So like now I'm at a 6 or 7, I'll back down to a 2. When I'm sitting across from a legit boss, Sasha Banks, complete different.
I'm really different.
Than the badass chick I see on Monday Night Raw.
So you're saying, how do I get into that mode?
Yeah, I mean, is your alter ego? Or?
It is. I do say it's myself turned up.
Yeah.
All the way up. Yeah. It's me when I'm, if I had a couple of drinks, a couple of vodkas. That's what Sasha Banks is, letting loose all the way up, doesn't care what she says, doesn't care what feelings she hurts.
Is that heel mode?
That's both.
Both, okay, copy.
I feel like if you're going to be heel or babyface, you got to kind of stay true to yourself too. Whether you're
correct,
you know, and that's the number one thing I learned. I'm like, well, how do I be a babyface? You just do your same stuff. That's what people always say. But there's different motives.
There's a line to walk.
There is, but you have to have different motives now. Mm. I have to do things the right way, the babyface way. I don't know how I get into that mode. I usually, before I go out, I always say the same prayer. And I always just talk to myself. I'm like, what's your story? What happened to you last week? And what's your motive? And the biggest thing for me, it's, you're going out there to try to win and get these fans to care. I think it's the number one thing. When I walk out that curtain, I want people to care about me. And the moment I need to be on for them to care. If I just come out being how you see me now, I don't think they're going to care at all. So I'm always like, okay, I'm the baddest bitch when I walk out, and there I am, the baddest, the boss.
But here's the thing. When I turned heel after 17 in a battle with The Rock and a new attendance record for the Houston Astrodome. They said George Strait broke it. I don't believe that. Anyway, so I switched from a badass baby. You know, it was really a heel. But at the time, you know, it was what it was. So then when I switched heel, I started, I went to total chicken shit heel mode rather than embracing what the Stone Cold had backed down from anybody. Now, so I started backing away from people and playing chicken shit heel. And it was like, dude, I think Michael Hayes told me, he goes, what are you doing? He goes, you've never been like that. And all of a sudden you're doing it. So going back to what you just said, yeah, you do still have to stay true to who and what you are, whether you are a heel or baby. But me just trying to go, okay, this is what a heel does.
Exactly.
I went to default mode and just did it. And I was like, oh, dude, what are you thinking?
Right.
So I kind of had to, I really had to get more cerebral in my approach to my new heel role.
Yeah.
But yeah, you have to be true to yourself.
You have to. I'm still learning. I'm trying to incorporate old Sasha Banks into this new babyface Sasha Banks and, you know, vice versa. And just kind of waiting for them to pull that trigger of, when am I ever going to turn heel? They've teased it so many times where I'm like, is this ever going to happen? But right now, let me just enjoy and embracing this babyface role and liking the kids. I never had the kids like me before. So that's why I feel like my character always like Envita Bailey. Man, those kids love her.
Yeah,
the moment I turned babyface and I saw my first kid dress up, I'm like, oh, this is why she likes this so much.
I mean, that's so cool. It's flattering. It makes you feel good. But then again, by the same token,
it's time to have fun. It's time to let loose.
You,
yeah, it's an awesome feeling. I love it.
I think the hardcore fans are still going to embrace either or because they just want to be entertained at the end of the day.
I agree.
But you have to at least find. Like I said, when you see the kids are dressing up, it validates her.
Yeah, but it scares me. It's like, are they not going to like me now? Are they going to not dress up as me anymore? I'm like, I don't know. But we'll see.
Hey, let's turn off the microphone and we'll talk shop.
Yeah.
Off the air. Is there anything else you want to talk about? While we're on the air, and we've got to plug your social media, Instagram and Twitter.
I'm Sasha Banks, WB on both. Yeah, follow me.
Anything else you want to cover?
I think that's it. I mean, we've talked a lot. It's awesome being here in WB and in this women's division right now, where, man, these women are taking off and being a part of history. I think it's so cool, and thinking of all the stuff that I've got to do, or even seeing the women do with, you know, the Money in the Bank ladder match, and just having opportunities like that. I just hope that we keep on having this role and keep on growing and making it more. And hopefully we get like a women's Royal Rumble. I think that'd be really cool.
Oh man, that's a great idea.
I think that'd be badass.
That would be cool. Yeah, I love watching the way the women's division has come up, you know, going from back in the days. Shoot, I remember when Medusa was around.
Awesome.
Like, tough, badass chick. I mean, she was one of the boys. Everybody liked her because she worked her ass off and she was tough.
Yeah.
She was one of the boys.
She was
And
amazing.
Then, you know, there was a diva era. And, you know, it was cool. And then you got your Lita's, your Trish Stratus's. Yeah. I mean, I won't start leaving names out, but I mean, people that really started breaking from the pack. And now the women's division, it's not divas match anymore. It's WWE superstars.
Yeah.
And it's just great to see so many badass women being so highly skilled in the ring and getting better and seeing the scores. So more power to you and the rest of the gals.
Hell yeah. Thank you.
I'm here with Sasha Banks, the legit boss. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks for having me. Honored.
Have you heard Spike's Car Radio here on Podcast One? It's comedian, actor, and writer Spike Ferrison sitting on the porch in Malibu talking to his famous friends about cars.
My first guest is Jerry Seinfeld. He's right here. He was all right. Don't try to hug him.
Or Chris Hardwick.
I could feel everything on the road. I mean, it was basically like, it was like unprotected sex for driving.
Jeremy Piven.
You know what? I think you and Jerry are spiritually tied to cars, and I respect it and I love it, but I don't quite get it yet, but I want to get it.
Other past guests include Jason Bateman, Russell Peters, and even Adam Carolla.
Mr. Adam Carolla.
I just go with the queen. I mean, the king role has been filled, but the queen vacancy is open.
You're the queen of all media.
Get new episodes every Wednesday at PodcastOne.com, on the new Podcast One app, or at Apple Podcasts. And if you like Spike's show, check out our other car shows like CarCast with Adam Carolla, Everyday Driver, or Shift and Steer, exclusively on Podcast One.
All right, everybody, give me the go-home cue. It's time to wrap up this podcast and ride off in the sunset. Before I do that, man, I want to thank my guests, one of my favorites of all time, the legit boss, Sasha Banks, for coming by the crib today. It was awesome talking to you. Always great to see you. Badass pro wrestler and a real cool young lady. Good talking to you. Also, I got to say thanks to Bailey, the hugger, another one of my favorites, for stopping by the crib today. I'll play that podcast that me and Bailey and Sasha strung together for about 35 minutes. Probably play it next Tuesday. Bailey had to go do that personal appearance. She's always a pleasure to see her. Next time they come through town, we're just going to shoot the breeze, no podcast, hang out and talk about the business of pro wrestling. Awesome to see both ladies. Good luck to you. Safe travels on your way to India to go do those shows. As I said, I think Elias is coming up on Thursday, if not Gallows and Anderson. I don't know how I'm going to run that. I think I'm going to run Elias and go from there. But nonetheless, don't forget to watch Broken Skull Challenge every single Tuesday. We got 3 more weeks. Tuesday, 10, 9 Central, only on CMT. These are my all-star episodes. Do not miss these badass episodes. They're off the chart. I guarantee you that. All the shirts I'm wearing on Broken Skull Challenge, you can find them at prowrestlingtees.com/Steve Austin. Hey, folks, if you're thirsty, I got a damn good beer for you. It's an IPA, an India Pale Ale, the best one in the planet, and that's the bottom line. It's Broken Skull IPA from El Segundo Brewing Company, 140 Main Street in El Segundo, California. If you come out of LAX, hang a left. The brewery's about 4 miles away. Go get you some. If you can't go there, in California, they sell it at Whole Foods and Total Wines. If you don't live in Cali, check inside the cellar.com and see if they ship to your state. Last I checked, they were out of stock. We need to make some more beer. We need to get available to everybody out there because there's some thirsty people out there. Make more beer. People are thirsty. Hey, everybody should have a pocket knife. I got 2 badass pocket knives for your ass. Cold Steel makes them. The Cold Steel Broken Skull Knife and the new Cold Steel Working Man Knife, you can find them at my new Amazon store. Amazon has the best price on both knives. Just go to amazon.com/shop/Steve Austin. And I want to say one more thank you to all the fine sponsors of the Steve Austin Show. That's how I'm able to do this podcast for you twice a week for free. And you can find all my sponsors at podcastone.com. Just click on the Killer Deals button at the top of the page and then click on the Steve Austin Show banner. And speaking of Podcast One, the new Podcast One app is now available for download at the App Store or Google Play. There ain't another podcast app like this one anywhere, and that's because the new Podcast One app is loaded with some cool features that let you do a lot more than just listen to your favorite shows. You can access behind-the-scenes photos, articles, and connect with other fans of the shows you like. And you can watch over 1,000 360 virtual reality videos. You can actually watch some of your favorite shows in virtual reality. It's like you're sitting right in a room with them. So get to the App Store, Google Play, and download the new Podcast One app now, and that's the bottom line. You can follow me on social media. I'm on Twitter and I'm on Instagram. Both of them are at Steve Austin BSR. Folks, until next time, my name is Steve Austin, and I will catch your ass down the road.
This has been a Podcast One production. Download new episodes of The Steve Austin Show every Tuesday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.